I in Vav Amud Aleph. We're up to the two dots, about six lines from the bottom. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Hamachlif Para Bachamor, Umashach Bala Chamor Es Hapara, Velo Hispik Bala Para Limshoch Es Hachamor Ad Shemes Hachamor, Al Bala Chamor Lo Havi Raya Shaya Chamor Ukayim Bishas Mashiach Es Para." Visana Tunakawa comes to Gemara seemingly out of left field with the case that we'll see in a second is actually very, very similar to the cases that we've been speaking about. So imagine the following. Reuven and Shimon are trying to do what's called a chalipin. They're trying to exchange one's cow for a donkey. And then what happens is, so let's say Reuven owns the cow and Shimon owns the donkey. And now Shimon, who's the owner of the donkey, wants to now, you know, acquire the cow. So they have to do a kinyan meshicha. They pull the animal, each respective animal, and then they acquire the other one. So what happens? Shimon goes ahead and pulls the cow. He does Mashiach on the cow. But the problem is that before Reuven gets a chance to do Mashiach on the donkey dies. Now, the problem is, we don't know exactly at what point in time the donkey died in relation to when the kinyan was done on the para. Meaning, if we knew for a fact that the kinyan was done on the cow before the donkey died, then obviously the donkey now transferred ownership and the loss is on the buyer. If we knew that the kinyan had not yet happened, then of course the loss would be on the seller. The problem is, there's this window of time where we don't know exactly at what point the donkey died in relation to when the acquisition of the cow was done, so it's kind of up in the air. So the Gemara says this is a classic example of Hamotzi Mechaveru Olav Haraya. So the Gemara says it's now going to be incumbent on the owner of the donkey, in this case Shimon, to prove that the donkey was alive at the time that he did Mashiach on the Parah. If he can somehow prove that, so then of course he acquires the cow and Reuven loses out with the death of the donkey. If he can't prove that, then the loss is going to be on Shimon. And the Gemara says that the same standards are true when it comes to a Kala. So what does that mean? The Gemara says, hey Kala, Ilema Kala Bevesavia Midane. Hasa Maise Avraya Umapik, Hacha Maise Balhachamor Raya Umokim. So again, it can't be similar to the case that we mentioned yesterday of the woman who just gets married and she's still living in her father's house. Again, this goes back to the cases we mentioned yesterday about the woman who developed some kind of a physical imperfection, some kind of a blemish. If she developed a blemish in her father's house, it's going to be incumbent on her father to prove that the blemish actually developed after Erisin and not beforehand. Now, if in fact she's able to prove that, or the father is able to prove that, what the girl is attempting to do is to extract money of the ksuba from the husband. So that's a classic example of Hamotzi Mechaveru. She has to prove that he owes her the money. On the other hand, in the case of the Chamor, if he can prove that the donkey was in his possession, he's not extracting anything. He's keeping things in his possession. He's keeping the donkey in his possession, which would then mean that if the donkey were to be alive, he would then acquire the cow. So the two cases are not comparable. So the Gemara says, you're right. Amar Rabbi Abba, Kala Beves Chamia. It must be that we're talking about a scenario that the girl's already in the father-in-law's house. She's already after Erisin, she's living with the husband already. So now the Gemara says, in that type of scenario, the cases would seem to align. But the Gemara pushes back again. It's still not a perfect parallel, because in the case of the girl who's living with her husband, living in the father-in-law's house, if the husband were to prove that the girl developed a blemish, you know, prior to Erisin, and it's something that, you know, that she didn't disclose, what he's doing is effectively weakening the chazaka of the father or the chazaka of the girl. Because the girl's prior presumptive status was that she had no imperfections, and now you're trying to claim that she really did have one prior to Erisin. Whereas in the case of the donkey and the cow, if the owner comes and proves that the donkey was still alive at the time of the Mashiach, what he's doing is that he's basically reverting to the original status. He's saying that the donkey was in his possession at the time. So again, it's not 100% of a parallel. So the Gemara then tries again. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Kala Bevesavia Ula Kiddushin, Velo Tema aliba demanda amar kiddushin lav litivu and nitnu ella afilu lemanda amar kiddushin litivu and nitnu hani mile kiddushay vaday al kiddushay tos imayse raya in ilolo. Then the Gemara says maybe this is what the Gemara was referring to. Let's say the girl is still living in her father's house and the man already went ahead and did kiddushin, he did erisin. He paid money for the kiddushin, and now the Gemara clarifies, because there's a machlokas that appears at the end of Maseches Bava Basra regarding the nature of kiddushay kesef. If I go ahead and marry a woman using money, the question is what's the relationship that the woman now is supposed to have with that money? So in other words, one opinion in the Gemara is what's called kiddushin lav letivuin nitu, which means that money that was given for kiddushin cannot be thrown away. What does that mean? That basically basically means is that the woman has to hold on to that money because just in case something happens, the marriage dissolves, there's a divorce, there's a death, there's something, the money's going to eventually have to be returned. But the Gemara says you don't even have to pigeonhole yourself to that opinion. Even if you disagree with that, even if you think like the other opinion in the Gemara in Bava Basra, that the money that's given for Kiddushin, of course the woman is allowed to spend it. Of course, she's not obligated to store the money on a shelf and leave it there in case something happens in the future. Even if that were true, the Gemara says that's assuming that the Kiddushin that happened was a Kiddushin Vada. It was a certain, it was 100% of a Kiddushin. If it's a Kiddushin Tos, if the whole marriage was done under a misapprehension, the girl had some kind of an imperfection that wasn't disclosed at the time, so then the Gemara says the only way that the girl is going to be entitled to get that money is if she can prove that the blemish only happened after the fact. That is the classic example of Hamotzi Mechaver Olav Araya. She needs to prove that the mum only developed later on. Okay, then the Gemara says Meisvei. Machat Shenimtzeis Ba'ovi Beis HaKosos Mitzadech Rekshera Mishnei Tzad In Shreifa Nimtza Aleha Kort Dam Biyadua Shehu Lifnei Shechita Lo Nimtza Aleha Kort Dam Biyadua Shehu La'achar Shechita. Now comes the Gemara out of left field with the Halacha in Hilchos Trefos. This is a sugya that appears in Maseches Chulin. The Gemara in Chulin says the following. Let's say you find, after you shecht the cow, you find a needle that was lodged in one of the stomachs of the cow. So the question is, do we automatically treat that animal as a trefa? So it depends. The Gemara says, if the needle only penetrated one side of the lining of the stomach, then it's not considered a trefa. But if it penetrated to the other side, if it went all the way through the lining of the stomach of the cow, then it does qualify as a trefa. Then the Gemara continues in Chulin and says that if you find a certain measure of blood, there's a certain amount of blood, so then you know that blood was already there, that wound was already there prior to the shechita, which means that it's a trefa. And if you don't see any blood there or a certain quantity of blood, so then you know that it happened after the shechita. Then the Gemara says, Huglad pi hamaka, and the Gemara has a further qualification. Let's say there was some kind of a scab, some kind of a scar tissue that covered over the wound of the animal. So the Gemara says that if you see some kind of a scab, then you know that it was there already 3 days in advance of the shechita, which is basically another way of saying that you know the animal was a trefa. However, if there was no scab that was present, so then you know that any sort of a wound that might have developed, any sort of thing that might have made the animal into a trefa, would have happened after the fact, and then it's going to be incumbent on the butcher who buys the animal from the wholesaler to prove that the animal was in fact a trefa when he bought it. However, the Gemara says, "Yahiv tabach demei boili isuye raya umapik." Comes the Gemara and says that if the butcher already paid the wholesaler, he already paid the shochet, the guy who already shechted the animal, he paid him the money for the animal, and now he realizes that the animal might have been a trefa, and he wants to now claim that maybe it was a trefa at the time that it was sold to him, so he's going to have to prove that. Again, if we knew for a fact that the animal was initially a trefa, and the wholesaler was trying to pull a fast one over the butcher, then of course he would get his money back. That's not a question, right? The problem is that no one's 100% sure when exactly this issue developed. Was this an old issue that the animal had already for a while, and the shochet was trying to cover it up? Or no, maybe the animal was perfectly healthy when he sold it, and it only developed the issue later on. So the Gemara says, hang on a second. Yeah, it's a fair question, but again, as the Gemara pointed out, there were certain external signs that you were able to see also. Remember, we said that if there's a scab, if there's whatever, so there are certain ways to tell, but the question, of course, is going to be, how are we ever going to prove anything? That's the issue. So the Gemara now pushes back. The Gemara says, V'yamai, bal behema laisei raya v'nokim. The Gemara says again, we just said a second ago that if the butcher already paid the shochet, he already paid the wholesaler for the meat, so now it's the butcher's problem. Now the butcher has to prove that the animal wasn't a trefa when he bought it. But the Gemara says, why is that so? Why does the butcher have to prove anything about the animal? Why don't we say that the original owner, the original shochet, he should have to prove that the animal was a trefa. I'm sorry, he should have to prove the animal was not a trefa, and then if he can prove that, so then the butcher is going to have to keep the animal. So the Gemara says, no, b'delu yohiv tabacha. The case is that the butcher didn't yet pay him. So if the butcher has not yet paid money to the wholesale, to the shochet, so then of course it's incumbent on the wholesale to prove it because the money is still in the possession of the butcher. So the Gemara asks, my pasca. But if that's the case, why is the Gemara giving this kind of overarching generalization? In other words, usually we don't like to give what are called okimtas, right? Okimtas are basically like what are we dealing with here? Only in this specific scenario, this halacha. You know, we try to avoid as much as possible to limit the scope of a halacha where possible. So why is it that the Gemara is saying, well, the only time that it's true that the butcher has to, that the wholesaler has to prove anything is only where the butcher didn't pay him yet. So the Gemara says, no. Eloki also Rami bar Yecheskel Omar lo titzaitzenu lahani klari d'chayel Yehuda achim yishmei d'shmuel hachi amar shmuel kol shen nolat safik berishuso olav araya v'sana tuna kala. Comes the Gemara and clarifies and says that Shmuel has a totally different standard about who the onus, who the burden of proof is upon. It has nothing to do with who has the money in their physical possession right now. That's not the issue according to Shmuel, even though that's what we're used to thinking of when we hear the terms Hamotzi Mechaber Alvarai. We're used to thinking of, you know, who has the money right now. It's the other guy's job to prove that he really deserves the money. According to Shmuel, that's not necessarily true. He says the standard depends on in whose domain did the suffix arise. In other words, if at the time the animal was in possession of the shochet, of the wholesaler, so the animal was 100% healthy, and now there's an issue, there's a scab, there's something that's leading us to believe that it might have been a treifa. So that if that suffix arises in the possession of the butcher, says Shmuel, it's the butcher's job to prove it. And Shmuel says the same standards are true for the kala, namely, wherever the girl happens to find herself, whether in her father's house or the father-in-law's house, wherever she is at the moment when the suffix arises regarding that blemish that developed on her body, that's going to be who the burden of proof is upon, according to Shmuel. Okay, so then the Gemara asks, Meisvei, so the Gemara again asks, if Shmuel is correct that the standard, that the burden of proof depends on in whose domain did the suffix arise, so then why did the Gemara tell us that if the butcher paid the wholesaler, it's the butcher's job to prove that the animal was not a, that the animal was a treifa when he bought it? Why is that the case? If the suffix arose in the butcher's domain, so then it should be incumbent on the butcher to prove it. It shouldn't be incumbent on the wholesaler. So the Gemara says, you're right. Again, the Gemara says the cases where the butcher already paid for the meat. So the Gemara then again asks, umay paska, why are we giving this kind of overarching generalization? So the Gemara says, stama demilsa kamadulu yoiv inish zuze, no yoiv inish chevasa. The Gemara says that the standard practice was that people would not typically give you the animal until you actually paid for it. You know, again, maybe people were not so trustworthy, whatever it was, but in other words, the assumption is that if the butcher already has the animal in his possession, he almost certainly already paid for it. And if that's the case, it's now going to be incumbent on him to prove that the animal was in fact a treifa when he bought it, both because he already paid the money most likely, and because the suffix is now arising in his possession based on what Shmuel just told us. Okay.
Was there any responsibility to check out the animal?
Well, that's a different issue. We usually assume la halacha that you're not really required to look, you know, to go out of your way to look for things that make an animal into a treifa. The only thing that we do check are the lungs, right? That's what we call glatt kosher, right? Glatt kosher is that term where we actually check the lungs, but that's really just a chumrah. Me'ikar adin, unless you have something that's leading you to believe that the animal is a treifa, you see the animal looks very weak or scrawny or whatever, but in other words, all else being equal, you're not obligated to go out of your way to check an animal to make sure it's not a treifa, because then you'd be spending, you know, hours and hours and hours looking over every little...
That goes back to Phil's question.
Yeah.
If he gets a nice-looking animal, and then he shucks it and sees that...
Correct. So that's exactly what this whole discussion is about. We have to figure out, you know, when did the issue arise? Was it there before? Was it not disclosed? You know, did it happen 2 minutes ago? That's exactly the issue. That's exactly what we're trying to figure out. Okay, then we said in the Mishnah, V'chachamim omrim, b'med dvar mamurim, b'mumin shebeseser. Amar Rav Nachman, v'nichbe, k'mumin shebeseser. Dameim. So if you remember, we mentioned yesterday that there was a distinction between obvious mumin and less obvious mumin. In other words, when the Mishnah told us yesterday that if the girl has some kind of a blemish on her that could theoretically undermine the marriage, that's only talking about, you know, blemishes that are hidden, that were not obvious, that the man would not have known about prior. So the Gemara says that if the woman has epilepsy, so that's the equivalent of mumin shebeseser. That's considered to be something hidden, because the assumption is that there's no way that she would, that he would know in advance that she had epilepsy. However, the Gemara says that's only true if the epilepsy comes at fixed intervals. Every first of the month, the woman gets epilepsy. So if that's the case, so she can easily hide it. She can just disappear for a day, you know, every month. However, if the epilepsy comes at infrequent intervals, it comes randomly, so then there's no way for her to hide it. She can just get epilepsy in the middle of the street. So the Gemara says, then he should have known about it, and the fact that he agreed to marry her means that he was obviously mochel on that.